Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is author C.P. Stewart. He has just released a wonderful sci-fi novel titled Through the Triangle. Good afternoon, Charles, and welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Simon.
Maybe we could start with a little background. Who is the mysterious-sounding C.P. Stewart?
Not very mysterious at all. I'm just a retired physics teacher. Well, I taught chemistry, too, but I still teach occasionally. As a matter of fact, I'll be teaching, I guess, two physics labs at the University of Pittsburgh, one of their branch campuses in the springtime. I'm married with two grown children. I have one grandchild who's a little dear. When I was teaching high school, I was a wrestling coach for 8 years, and hence some of the wrestling references in the novel, and I also raced stock cars for a while. So that's me in a nutshell.
sounds like you have a pretty diverse set of interests.
Oh, yes.
Is Through the Triangle your first foray into the world of writing?
Yes, it is. This was my first attempt, and so far I've been very pleased with the response.
Right. Where did the idea originate from?
That's a funny story. Actually, it's been kicking around in my head for a couple of decades, and it finally got to the point where I just figured I had to write it, so I did. As a matter of fact, my son is a physics teacher in Naples, Florida, and when we were visiting him a few years back was when I actually sat down with my laptop and started it right there in his living room.
Is it one of those projects that, you know, you occasionally pick up, you do a little bit on, you put it away, you forget about it, or, you know, have you been steadily plugging away at it for, you know, these two decades?
No, I didn't really start it until, like I say, just a few years ago, but I wrote it pretty steadily right through, and then came the revisions and the additions and so forth to make it a little more, what do I want to say, palatable to the literary audience.
I think from a technical standpoint, it is actually very well written. Did you use a professional editor?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. Well, I have to congratulate you. You're one of the very few authors that can pull off actually writing a book without a professional editor.
Well, I thank you very much.
I'm very impressed. In fact, why don't you give us a quick synopsis of the plot, but don't give us any spoilers. We don't want the listeners to, you know, to understand the whole plot, just a little bit about it.
Well, first of all, I'm not a person that likes science fiction that's far out, you know, and so this is a, what I might say, a down-to-earth, everyday people-type situation, and it's there's no secret because it's written on the back of the book, but they go out for a fishing trip into the Gulf Stream off of Florida's coast, and when they come back, they find that Florida is pretty much deserted and can't understand what transpired. And along the way, they run into some people that have been affected by the history that's transpired between the time that they left and they came back.
Right, and it does involve the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, but it's not about the Bermuda Triangle per se. It's about the people involved and what happens. I've often wondered, and I'm sure a lot of people have wondered, about these people that disappear in the triangle, whatever happens to them, you know. And suppose that you were one of those. What could transpire? Do you just cease to exist, or do you just not even realize you've gone through it, and all of a sudden you're gone from the people that you knew, that you've gone from being a person to a statistic in just a blink of an eye?
Yeah, I found that a really interesting approach. In fact, I really liked the way that you developed the plot. Often with science fiction, you just get thrown into some alien world and you have absolutely no point of reference. I thought your approach, as you say, was very down to earth, and yet it was incredibly creative. You know, it's the little things that make the difference. The murderer who happens to get involved in the trip. I thought that was an excellent twist.
Well, thank you. The one thing that I strive for in the novel was to make it believable. And I lose interest in books that I read that aren't believable. And I wrote this so that it would be not only science fiction people who would read it, but just those who want a good story or looking for some suspense or a thriller or an adventure story. It should fit into all of those.
Yes, and I think I can certainly back you up with that. You know, as a reviewer, I read a lot of books, and although this one most certainly fits on the science fiction shelf of the local library or bookstore, it is a book that has a wider appeal. It is just a great adventure tale. And I also think that, again, where you have excelled where other science fiction writers often fail is in your character development. I think you did a very, very good job of generating strong characters. Yeah, and
well,
you... I'm sorry, carry on.
I said thank you.
Oh.
This is my first attempt at this, and the feedback I've been getting has been tremendous so far, and I'm surprised myself, really.
Right. In fact, the feedback you're getting is, on the whole, very, very positive?
Well, the official press release just went out, I think, Thursday or Friday of last week, and I've already had to mail out 32 copies of the book for reviewers that want to review it. And that's, I was kind of surprised at that, and it is expensive, but, hopefully down the road that'll pay off.
You do have to be somewhat careful, though, with those kinds of numbers. I was talking to an author just a couple of days ago, and he had this great story about how he'd been inundated with requests, but he wasn't the sort of person that was just going to take it on blind trust. So, he wrote to each and every person, and asked them what they were going to do. And there was one lady who actually didn't plan on reviewing it at all, but planned on giving it away on her coupon site.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He was less than enamored with that idea.
I can imagine. Well, here I am. I'm a novice at this, so I just, on blind faith, sent them out.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you got to try it.
Well, you got to. Yeah, that's right.
Have you actually had any reviews printed? Well, obviously there's mine, but anyone else yet?
Actually, yours is the only one so far that's been printed. The other people should be receiving theirs since we had no mail on Monday. They were just mailed out yesterday. So I'm sure it's not even in their hands yet.
Right.
Gee, do you think I should mail them and ask them right now before they open the package?
Yeah, right. If you're going to put it on your coupon site, please send it back.
Send it back, right.
You published on the Outskirts imprint. And
yes.
I believe that's a self-publishing company. Did you try the traditional routes of publishing at all?
I did let me see, I probably sent out maybe, I would think in all, maybe about two dozen queries. And luckily, it just wasn't the right fit or whatever, but I did some serious rewriting in some parts of it. So if it would have been published by them, I'm sure it wouldn't have been nearly as effective. I did get a request to for further manuscript, and it was rejected only because it just wasn't what they were looking for at the time. But the way I understand it, being a new writer, it's extremely tough in this economy for publishing houses or literary agents to take on somebody new because of you're not a tried and true quantity, a commodity.
Right. It's very tough. In fact,
yes.
Some horrible statistics for you. In 2008, R.R. Boker, who are the keepers of the ISBN numbers, their statistics reveal that there were 300,000 new titles put out in 2008 in the U.S. alone. I mean, brutal trying to find a publishing house. In fact, another author I spoke to last week, he had tried the traditional route, and he had a very strong book. And after only a few inquiries, a traditional house picked him up, and so he sat and waited and waited. And then 6 months later, they wrote to him and said, sorry, we're not going to do this because we haven't got any money. You know, the economy's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he put out some more query letters and again got lucky. Second publishing house said, oh, we'd like to run with this. So he waited and waited and waited. And 8 months later, they came back and said, oops, we were only joking. We haven't got any money. And you know, so finally, out of frustration, he took the self-publishing route as well.
Mm-hmm. And I hope he's doing well.
Actually, he's doing very well with it.
Mm-hmm.
The crux of the novel concerns genetically modified foods, which is a very timely topic, and one that's garnered much public interest. Your personal thoughts, should we be exploiting plants and animals at the gene level?
To tell you the truth, I am very reserved on that. I think to a certain extent some research does need to be done, but there have got to be some severe safeguards. Nothing done carte blanche, as in the novel.
Right, and you know that plot line in the novel really does hit home, because that is one of the arguments that is being put forward. Okay, our research today shows that, you know, this new strain of whatever is perfectly safe, but we do not know what is going to happen generations in the future.
Exactly. That's right.
In fact, all in all, you paint a pretty bleak outlook for the world 300 years from now. Do you think the world is headed for disaster? I mean, we hear almost every day about global warming, atomic weapons being developed by countries that likely should not have them. And are we on the verge of a disaster?
Let's put it this way. I've observed what happens in government and just all around me, and I've come to the conclusion that the chance of anything happening is inversely proportional to the sense it makes.
That sounds like something you learned in a physics class.
Well, it's more or less kind of the philosophy of the world as I see it. I actually, in a way, think I was optimistic in the book. I think that many of these things could very well take place well before that time. But, that's how I envisioned it.
Writing books is a bit like doing crack cocaine. One hit is never enough. do you have another book on the drawing board?
I have about three on the drawing board right now. And it depends on what mood I'm in, which one I'm writing on.
Okay. Do you have a goal on, you know, when we might see the next one arrive?
Well, actually, you know, by going the route that I did in publishing, I've got a lot of marketing to do on this one, and the way I understand it, even if it would have been traditional publishing, it would, matter of fact, I probably would have to do more than what I'm doing right now. Figure that, you know, once I can get things settled down with this to where it's kind of doing a lot of it itself, then I'll be back to writing. I haven't written for probably a month and a half.
Where can people buy a copy of Through the Triangle?
Well, it's distributed by Ingram and Baker and Taylor, but it can be ordered online at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It can be ordered through any of those bookstores. They can order from Ingram and Baker and Taylor. See, here goes the age thing again. There was something else I was going to say, and it just slipped out my ear. I can't think of what it was.
You've probably discovered that writing the book's the easy part. Selling it is the tough nut to crack. What are you doing? What are you doing marketing wise?
Well, Outskirts has, as I said, sent out a press release, and it went to. They sent me the list of the people, the ones that they sent to, and it was like 17,890 different, people,
yep.
Businesses, outlets, newspapers, whatever, and that's where the review copy requests were generated. They also did a 1-minute video trailer that is has been uploaded to like MySpace, I think Facebook. I know it's on YouTube and places like that. So you know, it started. I have there are different people that I know that have passed the word, and all the feedback I've gotten has been fantastic, really.
Have you considered doing any book signings, that kind of activity?
I am definitely considering it, but I haven't had time to go out and start beating the bushes yet to set any of those up.
Yeah, I don't think that many people who are not either an author or involved in the book world understand just how difficult and time-consuming marketing is, and how important it is. You know, no one's going to do it for you. If you want to sell your book, you're the one that has to go knocking on the doors.
Yes, that anybody that publishes either traditionally or with the self-publishing is still going to have to go out and do all of that. And unless, of course, you're a New York Times bestseller, and then in those cases, then the publisher does push you. So
right, one of the sad things is that if you look at most traditional bookstores, you know, which is the ideal place to get your book into, you know, you want your book on that store shelf, but the competition is so fierce, and bookstores are in business to make money, so they carry the New York Times bestseller list, which inevitably comes from the big houses, and the big houses wield a very big stick, and the big stick is, sure, you can have our number one bestseller, but you're also going to take, you know, these 100 other books that we can't give away.
That's right.
The independent. Sorry.
Right. I was going to say one other place that it's being advertised is it's going to be in the New York Times book section for, I think it's December 13th. So hopefully this will generate some Christmas gifts.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, that should definitely have an effect on sales.
Well, it's not going to be a big one, you know. This is going to be about 2 inches by 2 inches, you know. But at least it'll be in there, and hopefully somebody will see it.
Well, yeah, let's hope so.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that all our listeners will be, logging on to Amazon right after this interview is over and ordering copies.
Well, I hope so.
Actually, I know that it's incredibly early days. The book's been out for, 6 weeks? Are you getting any feedback? Are sales encouraging?
I have no idea what the sales are online. I know the people that that have bought it locally have had nothing but praise for it. So, you know, that to me is encouraging.
Right. You're a physics teacher.
Right.
What do you think your students are going to make of it? I'm sure that once they find out that you're a published author, they'll all be running out to read it.
Oh, I'm sure they will. You know, we used to have a lot of fun in physics class. So, I always said that physics is fun, spelled P-H-U-N. And, we did a lot of strange things. But, you know, physics is something that can be very stagnant and number-oriented, or it can be exciting and relevant and still be number-oriented. But, you know, at least we try to do some exciting things.
Yeah, I grew up in England. You can probably tell by my accent. And I went through the English grammar school system. And it's very stuffy, very stodgy environment. Every subject was made to be as absolutely boring and mind-numbing as possible. And physics was right up there, I hate to say it.
Of course.
And you know, one of the things that bothers me now when I look back is, you know, how much more engaging all of the subjects could have been if the teaching style had been different. You know, physics and math are two very good examples of where you can present everyday problems and make the learning have relevancy,
uh-huh.
Or you can create absolutely inane problems that appear to have zero relevancy to today.
Precisely. Yes.
Right, and obviously, from the way you're talking, you do like to keep things in the context of, well, you might need this at some point. You know, here is a reason why. In fact, absolutely true story. This was, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. I was involved in a project. I used to be in the computer business, and I needed to write some software to take some raw numbers, create a graph, but I needed the graph to kind of be flattened, if you follow my meaning, you know,
uh-huh.
So that, you know, it was a pretty curve rather than a whole bunch of spikes.
Straight line.
Right. And I mean, try as I might, I could not remember how to do it. You know, I know that I was taught, you know, many, many years ago, but the way it was taught had no relevancy in the real world.
So it had no relevancy at the time.
Right, yeah. So I actually ended up basically reinventing the wheel. I came up with my own scheme, which seemed to work, so no harm was done.
Were you successful?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I was. And
right.
Actually, at the time, I was... this was a large project with IBM, and the IBM guys, who definitely had the knowledge, looked at the raw data, looked at my results, and said, "Wow, that's a really good job you did there."
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I got lucky.
It's luck or ingenuity, one or the other.
That's right. Or just sheer bloody mindedness.
Whatever it takes.
A question I like to ask authors is about their characters. Many authors base them on real people, or maybe more accurately, a caricature of a real person, or even traits from several people rolled into one. Is that your approach? Are your characters real?
Actually, my characters were more from, you know, observation of strangers and so forth. And if you noticed, I tried not to give detailed descriptions, because I think a lot of this occurs in the reader's mind, and they can picture the person as they envision them.
Yes, and I like that approach, actually. But you say that, and yet you did such a great job of character development.
Yeah.
You know, sure, you didn't talk about their facial features, but I had a pretty good idea of who these people were. Yeah.
Well, it was, like I say, on observation. They weren't based on any person per se. Just thinking of the character and then writing the description around that.
Are you yourself much of a book reader?
I read as often as I can. I really can't say as I have favorite authors, but there are some that I look for and try to read more than some of the others. I like Robert B. Parker, Clive Cussler. Those are probably two that are Stuart Woods, three that are kind of at the top of my list. Some of them, they've changed their style over the years, and maybe I've gotten a little from it, but they're just, they get me thinking. That's one thing I like.
Right. Well, one of the problems I have with the mainstream author is that I find a lot of them tend to get stale and blasé. A good example of that would be The Hunt for Red October, whose name escapes me, and Tom Clancy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, his early novels were fresh, they were exciting, they were, techno thriller, had a lot going for them. And then somewhere along the line, he just became an industry, which spoiled it for me. I can't remember the last Clancy novel I read. I read three or four in a row that had that horrible sameness about them, so I put them down. My favorite reading these days is first-time authors. You just never know what you're going to find. And I'm hugely impressed with the high quality of a lot of the first-time authors' books. Yours is a great example. I mean, it's tremendously well put together, both from a technical perspective, from a plot development, character development. It's the sort of book I would expect to be someone's third or fourth foray into writing. So I'm impressed.
Well, I appreciate that. I know what you mean. Sometimes, like Clive Cussler, some of his first works were, to me, a little more interesting, but he's branched off and I think more or less added his name to other writers just so they can sell their books. And I can see what happens with certain writers when they're writing in a certain genre and they just want to keep up the success, and I think after a while your ideas become stale and repetitive if you keep doing that.
Yeah, going back to Tom Clancy, I think his major mistake was he outwore the welcome of his main characters. Time after time after time, the same people appeared, and there's only so much you can do with a character. Sure, you can reuse them a couple of times, but eventually they become shop soiled.
I understand.
Alas, our time is up, but I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me this afternoon. And I'm sure I speak for everyone here at Blogger News in wishing you every success with Through the Triangle. And I, for one, will be keeping my eyes peeled for your next go-round.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Simon, for having me on.
This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great afternoon. And I'm sure that we will be back on with another guest in the near future. Goodbye.